720 WGN. Live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Dane Neal here with you until 5 a.m. sitting in for Nick DiGilio. We are going to talk a little bit of movies. We know his listeners love movies. We're going to talk some of those. Blake Stubbs is going to be joining us and some of the new releases that are out there and the trials and tribulations that go along with watching those movies. Dino Tiberi is to my right. We've talked a little bit about the Harry Carey situation. He is he is one of those guys who is in tune with him in the other and afterlife. But we're going to talk a lot of different sports. We're going to talk some of the disappointments that is, you know, Chicago Bear viewing at this point, but some of the changes they can make, maybe should make. So we'll talk about some of those.
Absolutely, and based on today's performance, there's certainly several areas they could make some changes in, and we'll see what happens as the last chunk of the season progresses on, but not a good finish today.
The last nuggets of, right, it's like leftovers from, like, the refrigerator. Nothing looks really good. If you could maybe do something with it, who knows,
Before it turns to mold. But then...
So we'll talk a little bit of Bear. You know, we're going to talk some Bears. We're going to talk a little Cubs, of course, right? You know, what the Cubs need to do in order. You don't want to say right the ship, because they did have, I think, from, you look at objectively, a 10,000-foot view, this was, you know, a success. Anytime you get to the, you know, you win the division. And for Cubs teams, I know we have different expectations now. Our modern-day Cubs, this is, you know, you're expecting them to get to the World Series. Yeah, we're spoiled. And good. Good for us. We need some spoilage. Hey, it's kind of that whole theme, right?
Yeah, right back to it again.
The rotten food. So, yeah, the Cubs, you know, you win the division, you get all the way to the League Championship Series, and they just didn't have what they needed to do, you know, pitching-wise. It just wasn't there.
Yeah,
you know,
they just, the bullpen had struggled down the stretch, and there were a lot of things going on the pitching staff as a whole, and you didn't get the quality starts you needed, and just it all added up to some bad results. And you know, they got through with Washington barely. You know, they had to go to five games with them.
Yeah. Well, we knew that when we had talked about it, that was going to be a scary series. You know, they were the Nationals, but you know what? They have that secret weapon that is always good for the Cubs. It's Dusty Baker, right? You knew. And he was going to be there confused and perplexed as to how this happened again. The one thing is, you know, ultimately that's kind of the guaranteed result. And I don't know if there's a ton of reasons why that team should have lost. That team had some amazing pitching, and you know what? They came out and they pitched amazing.
Yeah.
So they were good, you know, and the Cubs had to make almost no mistakes in certain situations. They came through there. They made lots of mistakes in other situations, and then ended up getting through it. But that was really for this season, Dino, right? That was their World Series.
Yeah,
right?
It really was. I mean, you know, the bullpen, as we mentioned before, I mean, just the crazy games that they played there in the last couple of that series, where everybody was, you know, each team was using their starters to come in and pitch because they didn't trust their bullpen guys. And, you know, Dusty Baker, of course, you know, his track record preceded him as usual, as he doesn't get to the, you know, he gets to the he's on the doorstep, but he just can't make that next step ahead.
I'm not really sure what to make of Dusty Baker, because...
No, I don't think we're going to be making much of him for a while.
Well, no, because you look at him, and he is, you know, on record, on paper, on resume, he is one of the most successful managers, you know, but in the end, he has been given, you know, some of these teams that he has had have been... You know, you should win with those teams. I mean, it all comes down to it, and everything's got to go right. But that Nationals team, you know, I guess you're looking at it as like, there's no reason why they shouldn't be in a World Series.
No, there's too much talent on that team. The pitching staff was so good. They went out and made some pickups at the deadline to get their bullpen fortified. And he just, I don't know how he did it or how he always does it, but it seems like
it's not his fault.
Right, but the players, the players didn't come through for him, but there were a few things in there, like decisions that he made.
What did he say? He's like, it was just a, you know, an unforeseen series of occurrences.
Yeah,
and you're just like, it really was, because Dusty Baker had nothing to do with the guy getting picked off on first or like him, or some of these amazing plays, you know, that were happening from the catcher in the second. But it was just like, of course it had to happen to Dusty Baker.
And unfortunately for him, you know, he's been in those situations when he was here with the Cubs.
Giants.
You know, the Giants. I mean, he's been there, you know, 10 games, I think it was, where he had closeout games, and he hasn't been able to close them out. So it's like...
It was a little bit of deja vu, because there were some nail biters and some, you know, toothpick biters in those games. And I just, this is one of the things I had kind of a wave of relief. You know, it's the kind of thing, it's like when you're, when you watch it and then in your mind, you're shell shocked. You go back to the, to your own situation of having, that's your guy, right? Dusty Baker.
Right.
And then the toothpick chewing and all those kind of things. And then the wave of relief saying like, oh, that's right.
That's right. He's not with us. He's on the other team.
But he was doing a lot of that. You know, he gets nervous. He does that stuff. And, so they ended up getting in there, and then you get into a situation with the Dodgers, and we'll break it down a little bit, but you know, everybody's seen it a bunch of times, but you look at those are the games that you have kind of to build off and say, here's where we need to make some changes. And the Dodgers, it was just, it was their year, at least from this end of, you know, they didn't have
right.
you know, Astro beating.
Right.
Because all the things, that same series between the Astros and the Dodgers is the same one as the Cubs, except in those moments where the Cubs folded, the Astros did not.
Right.
But same stuff happened. You know, yeah. people came out.
Yeah, a seven-game series. They had just crazy turns. A one game, both teams were in double figures for,
yeah.
you know, 13 to 12 or whatever the final score was in that one game. And it was just insane. You know, how that stuff went back and forth, and you're right, it was just the, you know, the difference where the Astros took it to the next level and closed them out where the Cubs couldn't do it.
And in a time period where, and we're going to go to break in maybe a couple minutes here, but in a time period where the NFL's numbers are down, right, the NFL really had surpassed in all, just kind of in all reality as America's pastime, right? And you look at baseball, and you, of course, as a longtime baseball fan myself as well, you look at these last two World Series, you look at the playoffs leading up, yes. These are exciting times. I mean, the baseball's never been better, right? These yeah. are the games where people are like, oh my gosh, baseball.
Yeah, I tell you what, people are actually going back and watching baseball games where they hadn't been doing
that. That was the rap. It's so boring.
Right. Yeah, it's too, you know, it's 3 hours long and everything takes so long. And, you know, but these games were action packed from beginning to end. I mean, it was just, you were just waiting for something crazy to happen, and it did.
Yep, yep. Well, some crazy things are going to happen. Obviously, some moves are going to happen. And Theo Epstein is always surprising us, usually in pleasant ways, which is good. So when we come back from this break, Dino and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the moves that the Cubs need to make. Some of it maybe to bring back some old people, right? And maybe to get rid of part ways with some old people. And then also some other changes that are happening league-wide. Some of the new rule changes that are come into effect to kind of either speed up the game or stop Contreras from going out to the mound. You know, all those kind of things. WGN. I want to say on the road. On the road with Dane live here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Absolutely no one is on the road. It is 2:21 a.m. Dino Tiberi to my right. Casera is in the booth, and we're going to talk about a bunch of different things in the news. I mean, a lot of different things in the news. There was a passing of a number of different individuals. We'll get into those, right? Some prominent ones in the world of entertainment, music, and serial killing, right?
So craziness.
Yeah, negative kind of stuff. So we'll do that. We did get a text from the 262 asking if this was a replay if the Cubs were done a month and a half. Yes, they were, but now it's into that whole hot stove league, so sit back, relax. We're going to kind of prognosticate on what kind of things the Cubs need to do in order. Plus, Dino and I haven't been in, and that's what we do. We talk a little bit of Cubs. So, and they made some rule changes, I think, just in the last handful of days that are going to change the way that we watch and enjoy the Cubs or baseball or whichever teams that you like, the Brewers or anything going on next season. So, Dino, they've got some changes. I know they're always kind of working on things, and some of these kind of get floated. You wonder if it's sort of like a political trial balloon, like, hey, what do you think about this? You know, and then people are up in arms. Okay, never mind. You know, where they wanted to go ahead and change the amount of balls and strikes, right, to speed up the game. They're always looking to kind of speed the game up. Some pitchers work fast. Some work excruciatingly slow. And so now I guess they've got some, we've got a time clock on them. What are they
doing?
Yeah,
there's going to be they're talking about doing a pitch clock. And, you know, to me, if you want to speed the game up, and it's not a popular, you know, decision, I'm sure, to not have so many commercials. I mean, especially during the postseason, it was like you're waiting around for the inning to start because you've got four or five minutes of commercials, it seemed like. But they're not going to do that because of the revenue aspect of it. I get that. They're
yeah.
trying to cut corners, you know. And maybe you limit the number of visits, like we were, you know, Contreras, he used to go out to the, seemed like he was going out to the mound at least four or five times an inning sometimes with some of these pitchers he was dealing with. It's like they're not on the same page.
It's a doctor prescriptions as needed. right? And so he would come out. That was kind of his MO, though, right? You know, and there'd be times when, you know, maybe if it's a younger pitcher, or if there's maybe more of a different, you know, kind of a, there's some indecision in the situation of what pitch, right? Some of these pitches were important. You want to get out there.
Sure,
you want to do the right
make
thing.
Make sure you're on the same page.
But there's guys like Lester who basically would like stop him halfway. No,
go back. Don't come out, or I have nothing to say to you. Just put the finger down and let's go.
Right. And so I know they're trying to make it a faster game. You look at. Here's one of the things that I think that they did change. So they've got that clock at 20 seconds. It seems pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, that'll go pretty fast.
I don't think it's going to be a popular thing with the pitch thing. Because some guys work fast, some guys work slow. That's just the way they are.
Think of Johnny Cueto. You know, he's slow.
Well, if they had that when Steve Traxel was pitching for the Cubs, you know, they would have. He was one of the slowest pitchers on the mound ever.
Wasn't like Mark Burley one of the fastest?
Yeah, so he pitched a game, I think, in an hour, and I want to say like an hour and 15 minutes, it seemed like.
He's like, I got stuff to do.
Yeah, I don't have time. Give me the ball so I can throw it back to the catcher.
One of the other things, and it's like we've seen some of those changes on the NFL side where they kind of agree, like, hey, let's just make more scoring. People like that stuff. And if you look at the last World Series, people were up in arms. This is amazing. You know, they really enjoyed it. And so now I guess they're changing the strike zone to make the strike zone instead of the knees or below the knees to be above the knees or just above the knee to kind of get more balls in play.
Right. I think that's the whole thing is to get the ball, get the baseballs in play as fast as they can and, you know, changing the strike zone and just having the umpires be more accurate. This has been one of those years where, I mean, I can't remember the last. I mean, it's been getting progressively worse, but this year was one of the worst years for umpiring as far as balls and strikes. And part of it might have been due to the confusion about the strike zone as far as what's supposed to be a strike and what's not. But with replay, you know, that's the other thing. You're talking about speeding the game up. You've got replays for so many different things. It's like you barely get two plays in a row without having it stopped.
Here's the I think it's once you go replay, you cannot go back.
I know.
Because
I know.
You know, once you're accurately determining whether he was really, and some of these things are coming down to like, there's no way. And I know we all kind of embrace, and there's this love affair with the human error, right? And it's just part of the game. It's the nostalgia. But it also sucks to get screwed when you really were safe. And I think we can all accept when you weren't, right?
Sure.
And so instead of, and now the cameras are so good and they can slow-mo it from 10 different angles. It's just a different game. You know, you and I remember going to Wrigley Field and there was no Jumbotron. They were just like tiny, I don't know, like 14-inch screens like 30 feet away over your head, and they wouldn't replay anything controversial.
No.
So you just had to be like, you know, from wherever your seat was.
I guess we got to go with whatever he called.
Yeah. And now, the thing that's been sort of the holy grail of umpire control has been the ball and strike.
Right.
But now you see it after every strike. They've got the electronic configuration.
The little box of where the pitch, where was it? It was in or out of the strike zone. When eventually, I know they're talking about maybe going to an automated strike zone. Who knows? One day you may get to that. But
why do you even need the guys out? I mean, I know it's all part of the game.
Yeah.
Right? But and there are certainly some calls in some situations that aren't available for replay. But, you know, at what point do you really? It's just a guy there that's either right or wrong half the time when the machine knows.
Right.
You know, unless the machine doesn't know all the time. Is there any reason, Dino, can you think of, I can't imagine not having, you know, a guy back there.
Putting his arm up, strike one.
Yeah, you're like a country Joe Wet, you know, or whatever. Yeah. You're just the guy that you love to hate, and then you come out and argue with. You're going to kick sand on the virtual, like.
You can't blame it on Joe West if he's not behind the plate.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I just don't know, because you don't need it. But you want it. You just want them. It's kind of this redundant thing. You want them to be right, but you know they're people. And then here's the other thing, too, is there always was, you know, and they've got their own egos, too, and you know it, where they would come out and, you know, they've got their own strike zone, or he's calling this, or he's just a little, he's tight today.
Right, or one league is calling it one way and the other league's calling it a different way.
Yeah, and everyone was just like okay with that. Well, this guy's really tough on this, you know, or so-and-so's mad because the strike zone's different today. I mean, it would take those little, I think those are unique characteristics of the game. Should they be?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough one to call on that. I mean, I remember John Lester struggling through a start earlier in the year when he thought he was getting squeezed, and, you know, some guys, it just changes the complexion of the way they attack the strike zone when they're not getting the calls that they need. And, you know, I don't know what the right answer is right now. I think they need to experiment a little bit and see how it's going to work out and maybe you know, down the road, the automated thing will be a thing that they can do. But, you know, speeding up the game with the pitch counts, we're going to find out real fast how popular that's going to be when they implement that.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we'll see. Well, we're going to implement some new players coming up. I know Dino's got some thoughts on when we come back from the news. We're going to, you know, some ways, some pitching, right, is some of the things. And then how do you take some of those players that you have, those chips that have value, to go get the things you do need when you've got maybe an overabundance of things that, I don't want to say you don't need, but that you already have a lot of. And on the prospect side, I think they've kind of emptied that. But on the field, they've got some chips to play with. /7:20 WGN. Dane Neal here in for Nick DeGilio until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberius to my right. Casera is in the booth. 312-981-7200. You can call in and add your thoughts. We're going to be talking about a number of different things. Some sports. Talking Cubs for another few minutes on some of the things that they're going to be doing in the off-season, the Hot Stove League. Then we'll kind of some thoughts. The Bears played today. And that, of course, the playing is, you know, subjective. That's a subjective term. They didn't play as well as I think probably a lot of fans would have hoped. And then coming up at 3, a little bit after 3, Blake Stubbs, blockbuster. Blake Stubbs is going to talk movies with us. We previewed it with our radio folks that do the radio plays. And they play all those great vintage radio shows. So basically, that was like movies at the time, right? You know, where you could listen to The Shadow Knows. You know,
right.
I love those things. So we talked about some of the movies that are out there. Some people love them, some don't. We'll get into Justice League and then some of the Marvel stuff, and as well as he's got some other things coming up a little bit after 3. And then in the kind of recognizing the passing, there's, you know, some famous people of varieties of notoriety have passed away. And then there's just some weird stuff going on that, you know, Dino, you and I don't always have the opportunity to talk about. And Casera, thanks so much for printing this out. $50,000, you can clone your dog, right?
Yeah.
Because we had one of our pets pass. That's a pretty steep, though, you know. So
that seems like a
lot of cash. Really like that dog, because you could get a lot of new dogs.
Sure.
That aren't that same old dog.
Fido 2 could replace Fido 1. Yep.
And then, just in the kind of cutting edge of, there's no pun intended there, but in the in pushing the envelope on what we can do in the medical world, we're transplanting heads now, which I think has so many. You know, once they get it dialed in, I think there's a lot of things that we can do. Imagine you take, right? Let's say you take the head of a Greg Maddux, right? You know, the professor. He knows what he wants to do. He's painting the corners. He's got a lifetime of experience, and you can put his head on like a new prospect with all the physical talent in the world. I mean, you could see down the road, maybe that's a long road, that could be good.
Well, is that a head transplant or just a brain transplant? You know, in that instance, you got to, you know, there may be a little bit of a difference there, but sometimes.
Well, you know, you still want him to look like Greg Maddux.
Good point. What if he was like 6'8", though? That would be a little bit odd.
Like a Randy Johnson.
Big head and a small body.
Imagine Greg Maddux's head on Randy Johnson's body.
Yeah, I don't think that would play out so well.
But that's
what technology's all about. I mean, it's amazing things that are going on in the medical world, and that's one of them.
That's the future. That's down the road, not this offseason. So for this offseason, since cloning a Randy Johnson, Greg Maddux, like head body combo, it's probably not likely by the time the pitchers and catchers report. Is what do you think they need? Obviously, they need pitching. You know, John Lackey says he wants to come back now. Maybe it is just for a haircut at this point, right? Because, you know, when we saw what happened, this was what it was, is you had, you know, and Joe Maddon, all the credit in the world. Obviously, they don't win a World Series without him. They are not the team. But he just didn't have anything to work with. And so from the viewing standpoint, when you saw those playoffs and you had pitchers, starting pitchers who went out and delivered, they did what they were supposed to do for the – we just didn't have any answers after the starter was gone.
No, the bullpen, they struggled so much. Each one of the guys had their periods where they were good, and then there were the periods where they were really bad. And then, of course, Joe had to use Wade Davis for multiple outs when he, you know, he just, again, right, like he did last year with Chapman, he didn't, you know, he tried to use him the same way, and, you know,
right, Wade Davis doesn't have the same kind of durability factor.
No, absolutely not. And so it was a difference when you don't have a setup guy that's getting outs, when you make a trade for Justin Wilson and he doesn't pan out, he can't find the strike zone. And then, you know, ultimately after the season ended, they fired, you know, their coaching staff got, you know, let go. Chris Bosio was let go. They let go of the batting coach, you know, John Maley. They let go of the third base coach. It was odd that they, because
how can you be so good over the last X amount of years that, and then also, well, now you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, and that's pretty much what it sounded like. And the weird, you know, of course, the old vote of confidence. Well, I'm not going to, you know, let go of my, you know, coaches. And then right after, not long after Madden says that, there they go.
You wonder if maybe some of them were questioning some of those managerial decisions that we all sort of questioned. We're like, yeah. No, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, because in that game where, because we actually got a chance to attend the game, Maxwell and I, the one game at Wrigley in the Dodger series that they did win, mm-hmm. you know, and it was the whole crowd was basically like, you know, if he comes to pull Arrieta out, like in the fifth inning, someone tackle Joe Maddon.
Right.
Because there isn't anything better going on. This is the last time Arrieta is going to pitch. So let him go out there and pitch till he can't pitch because he's way better than whatever you're going to bring in.
Right. And that's just the confidence thing with the bullpen down the stretch and then into the playoffs. Just he didn't have confidence in anybody. And so now.
For good reason.
Right. And because the proof was in the pudding, they couldn't get anybody out and they were walking guys left and right. And so it falls on the pitching coach at that point. My thing was it just didn't seem like, you know, there was enough emphasis on why isn't he getting these guys straight now? Because they're all going through it. It's not like it's one guy.
Right.
They all were having problems. And so it just snowballed. One guy couldn't get it. He walks a guy, and then the next guy comes in. The same thing happens. Carl Edwards was one of the great guys last year in the bullpen.
His neck is so long. He would be, for a great head transplant, I think there's a lot of...
There's some possibilities there. But and he's got a great arm, but he couldn't get the ball over the plate. And when he did, they rocked him because, you know, you got behind. And these are major league hitters, of course. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, they're waiting after the mistakes are made. They capitalize on it. The Dodgers made them pay every time they did that. And, of course, then Madden gets to the desperation point. He brings in, you know, John Lackey to pitch. And gives up the game-winning home run.
That did not go well.
No.
You know, even I, at first, I was like, well, maybe. And then I was like, yeah, no.
Get it out. And I was like, oh, really? Is this all this is the best we can do at this point?
I mean. Yep. So what do you do going forward? You know, because I think that they're still, and you've got that window. You know, the Cubs have, you know, a very young, very talented team. You've just got to put, and Theo, to his credit, that's what he's done is he's taken guys and put them into places, filled gaps and filled them in spectacular ways in a lot of different situations. And you've got Hayward still, he's the most expensive great outfielder ever. But he isn't.
He's the most expensive defensive outfielder ever.
I mean, there's your value when you thought you were getting a little bit on the offensive side. Can't do anything about that. And more power to him. The Cubs, you know, the revenue is in there. They can afford to do things. So what do they do? Because what's out there too? You're still a little bit hamstrung by what's available. Do you bring Arrieta back? You know, or no?
Well, I think you need to find out what the market's going to be for him first and see where it falls. I mean, maybe the price isn't what they think it's going to be, and the Cubs can go and make a play for him. You know, later on, not you know, making him a priority. You know, without you know, setting the market themselves.
Yeah,
let him see what offers he's getting. If he's getting something that's just crazy, then you're obviously not going to get in on that. I think Davis is more of an important thing as far as re-signing him because
you need that.
They
guy.
Don't have anybody they can count on if they don't. They bring him back, and their closer market is pretty thin.
Right,
and so
and he's an elite closer, and he saved every game he was in, except for maybe one during the regular season. So this is a not broke, don't fix it situation. But you have to fix Joe Maddon, though, too, and to say, like, in the playoffs, you cannot use this guy for two or three innings.
Yeah, you can't burn him out. You got to use him like you did during the season. I mean, there's going to be an exception. Maybe you need to get an extra out as opposed to three innings worth of outs. You know, it's, you know, we're not... But, I mean, that's what he did the last 2 years, and it worked last year for him. But
it was so close to not working.
Yeah, exactly. And he would have never lived that one down had he gotten, you know, something happened. But that's old news. I think what they need to do is go out and get some relievers that are going to come in and throw strikes. I mean, pitching to contact may be more important than striking out a guy every time the pitcher's on the mound. They ran into trouble with walks, and their defense let them down too. That was the other thing. There were spots where they were not as sharp as they were a year ago defensively, which led to extended innings, which led to, you know, runs being scored that didn't get scored last year. And I think those two things need to be shored up if they're going to have any chance of success next year.
One of the things that they're kind of dedicated to is not overpaying for talent, big free agent contracts and those kind of things. And so they're going to use some of these chips that they've got. So now, Cub fans, these are not going to be, you know, guys in the minor leagues. These are going to be players you know and love and appreciate that you see playing that are going to get traded off. You're going to lose maybe one or two of these guys. So before we go to break, you know, who goes? Yeah. Is it Schwarber where you finally just come to the terms that as much as we love him, he is a DH?
Yeah, and I think right now with him, the market's down a little bit because of the year he had. He struggled, you know, average-wise. He hit a lot of home runs, didn't drive in a lot. And you've got to, if you deal him, he's got to go to an American League team because you got to trade him somewhere he's going to be able to be used as a DH. And obviously with the National League not having it, that's where he ends up falling. And, you know, if you put him in a deal with maybe a prospect and with, you know, maybe another position player, they needed a couple starting pitchers. One, Alex Cobb from Tampa Bay is one of the top pitchers that's out there. They're going to be battling a couple teams to sign him as a starting pitcher. I think you're going to have to put a couple guys together in a deal. It may be Baez. It may be, you know, I hope it's not him.
Not Baez.
Yeah, I would think, though, that's
Hap, maybe.
Hap would be one of the guys, and Schwarber, and then maybe a prospect or two if you want to make a big deal for, like, a guy like Chris Archer from Tampa. So it seems like Tampa seems to be the blood, you know, that's their lifeline right now is where they're going to look for guys. There's other guys out there they can sign, and like I said, it's still early. Let's let the market determine where these guys and what kind of offers they're getting. There's going to be some crazy offers out there, I know.
Yeah.
And that's really where they need to shore up the bullpen.
What about Addison Russell? Is he a guy that you go ahead and, because they've got some redundancy in those position players, and you look at just the way that I see it from a 10th, and I love the guys. You know, obviously these are all great players that you have been such a big part of so much. They're all very young, have some value. But like Baez has a lot of these, you know, he's kind of growing into more and more value if he can just get his hitting down. And because when he first came into the league, that's what he was. He was the power hitter. Right. And then now he's turned into this fantastic fielder and all those other things. Whereas Russell, you know, a couple nagging injuries, maybe this is, I don't want to lose anybody, but I'm just saying.
No, you don't really want to lose anybody. And I think these guys are so young. That's the other thing. You don't want to really give up on them because they had a, you know, a little bit.
You don't, but you just, you've got your 3 years here in order to, before everybody gets crazy money. And
right. They're all going to want the big raises. And, you know, they also have to look in the future. Next year's free agent class is going to be a pretty good one. So maybe they're not going to go.
They get a Bryce Harper back here.
You never know what's going to happen, and I think that those are things they have to kind of keep in the back of their mind.
Be like the Rizzo souvenir company,
right? But I mean, there's some things they're going to have to think about it when it comes down to how much money they're going to have to offer and who they're going to give up in a trade. I mean, if they did trade Russell, that's a corner. That's a pretty good piece. You could get a good player for him and another player. For a starting pitcher, you know, Lackey, I don't think he's the answer. I think he's, you know, there's no chance he's coming back here. If he does, I'd be really surprised. But, you know, they need to turn the page. And, you know, if Arrieta comes back at a price that's in their budget and they want to do it, I'm fine with that. But if he doesn't come back, then they get a draft pick and they move on.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it all goes. And I know the Cubs convention's coming up. I think we'll probably have some thoughts on that as well. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some Bears. This is as current event as it gets from the time period when it happened to the time period that we could talk about it. And I know we've got some thoughts on that as well. So 312-981-7200, your thoughts on today's Bears game, what the Bears need to do, what kind of pieces they need. Maybe some of those answers are a little more obvious. Not that they're available, but but it's like we know where you got to fill some gaps. /720 WGN, live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It's staying in for Nick DiGilio until 5. We've got Dino Tiberi to my right. Casera is in the booth for all those Nick DiGilio fans that love movies. We're going to talk some movies with Blake Stubbs coming up a little bit after 3 o'clock. Maybe, you know, some of the best movies, we've talked about this before, you know, sports movies, some of the best movies of all times, you know, whether it's Chariots of Fire, I know that's one of your personal favorites, you know, Major League and some of those kind of things, and so we'll talk with Blake about those. Do you think there'll be a movie made of the 2017 Chicago Bears?
I don't think so. I mean, after watching some of the stuff that's been going on this year, I would doubt that because I don't even know, it'd be more of like not a tragedy, but it'd be, I don't know how you describe it. It's been just a weird year so far.
Well, the upside is that I think the defense has been playing really well, right? And
right.
Dan Hampton probably said that a little bit earlier today. But then the Mitch Trubisky thing, this whole experiment. You knew that the quarterback that they had that was going to be Glennon, that was going to be the starter, you know, wasn't going to be the starter for very long when they moved up and got Mitch Trubisky. And there's so many great things coming out of the block for him that looks like he's got all the talent in the world, all the physical attributes that you need. And he's just, now granted, he has no one to throw to. Is that really just the problem?
Well, I think that's one of the problems. I think, you know, at right now they're still trying to figure out what he can do and what he can't do. So they've kind of held back some of the, you know, the play calling. He's, you know, it's obvious that they're trying to run the ball and make an effort to do that. But today they threw the ball a little bit more early than I thought they would have. And, you know, the game was competitive for a while there and it, they went back and forth. And then, you know, it just seemed to me that, you know, like every other game, it just seems like they don't make adjustments coming out of the, at halftime. And then it ends up being, you know, like today, they come down to the last play. And of course, their kicker's woefully short on a, you know, way off to the right on his kick to end the game, and, you know, and they're right back to the drawing board again to see what they do next week. So it's like, you know, one thing after another. All year long, it's been a struggle, and I think John Fox, it's just inevitable he's going to be gone by the end of the year.
But who do you replace him with?
Well, they're going to have to look and see. He's got to be right now.
What's Mark Trestman doing?
Well, God, let's not go back to that. But, I mean, there's got to be some guys out there that have a little bit more imagination and a little bit more in tune with the game than John Fox is right now, in my opinion.
There has always been, every time it happens, you know, cyclically, that the Bears are looking for a different coach. Is, you know, the John Gruden, you know, is he available? You know, he's out there just making chucky faces and, of course, calling some, this guy, right? You know, he's always got his kind of little phrases that he does. Does he have what it takes to be, or can you lose touch a little bit? You know, you had Joe Gibbs come back after a while, and it was obviously wasn't, you know, the same guy, you know.
Yeah, I just don't think, in Gruden's, I mean, he's in tune with the game, but I don't know that his style is going to play with the way that the, you know, NFL is right now. It's, you know, I don't know that that's going to work.
He's not Bear Bryant. I mean,
no, but I mean, he's also a fiery guy, and there's some guys don't respond to that, and some guys do. So, you know, that's a difficult situation to see. I don't know what the market is right now. You know, I leave that to, well, maybe we shouldn't leave it to Ryan Pace either. He struggled with his, in his own right, not getting the talent for this coaching staff to be able to get right. But I don't have any confidence in John Fox, to be honest with you.
And yeah, he just
doesn't seem like he's, you know, he's making the right decisions. He's not making, like I said, he's not making adjustments. It's just, it's frustrating to watch the same stuff. But they have a really good defense.
Yeah.
But offensively, they don't have.
They've got the running back.
They've got a running back. The line's been hurt. You know, you've got a rookie quarterback, so and you've got no one to throw it to. They don't get any separation. These guys are, you know, third and fourth receivers at best that he's got on this roster right now. And there's just no way, if they get into a shootout or get into any kind of an offensive game, that they have the firepower to stay in it. I mean, luckily the defense has been pretty solid, but beyond that, it's just a struggle. And today was a microcosm of the whole season, the way that they just didn't get the job done in the end.
When you got a variety of talent in there, it really does kind of bring up the contrast between a team like the Bears and a team like, let's say, the New England Patriots, where they kind of just change their playing style to kind of fit with whatever players they have. You know, when they have Randy Moss, they're, you know, he's setting records for touchdown passes. When they seem to just have this pipeline of kind of scrappy, smaller, little kind of wrangly guys that they just throw the ball to, and those guys seem to be serviceable, and the Patriots continue to win. Why can't they get any of those guys?
Yeah, I don't. You know, there's a couple of guys on that staff of, you know, Josh McDaniels tried to be a head coach out in Denver. That didn't work out well out there. He ended up coming back to New England. Now there's some guys that are available. They'll be available after the year's over. What they'll have to look at. I just think that right now, you know, stability is the biggest thing, and they keep changing coaches. I mean, we've gone through three of them in the last 6 years, so it just seems like until you get that to that point with where the general manager and the coach are on the same page, or near the same page in this case, but it just doesn't seem like right now they're going to be successful. And maybe a few years down the road they will be, but right now they just don't have the talent to keep up.
So the advice from Dino would be, at this point when it comes to the Bears and when they're on, is to look away, right? So
look outside of the organization for the next coach. Or I just don't know if there's anybody on this staff that would be a viable candidate. And you know, and I would, but I like Vic Fangio. I think he's a great coordinator. Everywhere he's been, he's done a great job. And you know, with the guys that he's got right now, he's, you know, they're ranked in the top half of the league in defense, and you know, that's really all you can ask for. So
Dino, as you start to make different plans, less frustrating, annoying, or depressing plans for your television viewing on a, or just your viewing in general, your activities on a Sunday, and it goes to, let's maybe go to the movie. What was the last movie you went to? The last actual, I mean, you've watched movies, right? You know, the
I've watched,
television.
Right, absolutely. But yeah, I haven't been to the theater probably in, I'd say 2 years. I can't remember the last one I saw.
So it takes something special.
Pretty much.
Like a Star Wars premiere. I know you're not a big Star Wars guy. You're not in line there, you know, wearing the Chewbacca costume with all the other droids, right? Waiting for the premiere of the latest movie.
Yeah, no, you won't see me there if I, you know, any of those movies, you know, Harry Potter movie, none of that stuff. I'm not going to be there for that. But, you know, I do like going to the theater. I just, I haven't been there in a while. To me, it's just easier to do it at home.
Okay. Well, no, it is. But sometimes these movies, you know, there's a time to see them in the theater. And it is it's an amazing experience. Now, I know my family got a chance to see Justice League. And they saw it in one of the Dolby, you know, where they've got it now, Dino, where the screen's a little bit curved. It's, you know, super high definition. The chair rumbles along with it. And you can order a burger and have it delivered to your seat. So things are moving up in the theater world. You got to get out there and experience it. We're going to experience some talk on the movie side with Blake Stubbs. He's going to be on with us. WGN live in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 a.m. I'd stay in for Nick DiGilio. To my right, Dino Tiberi. And now, Dino, your connections to the Nick DiGilio show run deep, and they are genetic.
Well, there's a
right?
There's a little bit of, there's a few different connections with Nick and his family. My father, actually, and my uncle, my grandfather, I mean, they all knew Nick's father many years ago.
Wow, okay.
So, actually, that's where the initial connection was. And then, of course, that was on my father's side. Now, on my mother's side,
you did, like, the whole family tree kind of thing?
Yeah. But anyway, on my mother's side, my uncle Larry was Larry from Aurora, which, of course,
so you know, a very famous member of the Nick DiGilio community.
He was a regular contributor to the Nick DiGilio show for a long time, and then he unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But my uncle was just a crazy dude, and there was no way around it. And he just, everything that he did on that show was how he was in real. It wasn't just an act he was doing while he was on the air.
Right. He wasn't like, Dino, hold on, I got to work up into Larry from Aurora.
He didn't have to do any of that. That's just how he was. He was always looking to have a laugh. I mean, we always talked a lot of different things. We talked sports. We talked just about everything. He was big into wrestling.
Like a Moose Cholak kind of wrestling.
Yeah, back in the day, he was into all that stuff. And and he also did a few, he was an aspiring singer. Of course, there's a few videos that there was just crazy stuff. One time I think he bootlegged a movie from some, you know, place.
See,
he brought that over.
That's a nice tie-in.
Yeah, it was just a lot of different stuff. You know, and my uncle is, you know, rest in peace. He was a good guy, and I really miss him every day. It's still, you know, now and then I get reminded of things, especially like now that we're doing, you know, that we're filling in for Nick's show tonight. It just kind of brings it all full circle that, you know, my uncle, he had a unique brand of humor and a unique way to reach out to Nick, on his show, when he would call in just about every, I mean, I think he called in every time Nick was on the air. So, I mean, I still have some of the stuff, you know, that I recorded from when that was on, and every now and then I go back and listen to it because it's, you know, it just reminds me, so, you know, of what he was all about. So, yeah, so that's a connection. And Larry from Aurora is my uncle.
Well, then you also mentioned, too, is, you know, on the genetics side, it made me think, you know, those commercials where they've got a guy that says, we thought we were German, but then we did this whole, I don't know, the genealogy thing, right, where you take some kind of swab, you send it in, you find out, like, we're Korean. We had no idea.
We had no idea. There, right?
There should be one where you go ahead and do that same thing. Instead of telling you that you're really Norwegian instead of, like, Czechoslovakian or whatever you thought, that it tells you who you're related to. Maybe it gives you, like, three or four four famous people.
Sure, that you had no idea you were connected to.
Yeah, right. Al Capone, Charles Manson, who knows? It isn't always, you know, a bed of roses out there.
True.
So on the line with us now, and you mentioned some of the movies that are going on and some of the ways that they can tie in. I know with some of the Charles Manson, I know there's been some movies, right, related to him. We won't get into that. Maybe Blake will fill us in a little bit. But some of the big ones, the blockbusters that are out in the theaters right now, plus some on the horizon. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is on the line. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you for having me, as always. It's good to be back, especially in the middle of the night. It's some of the best time to talk movies.
Back when
That's
you were
not a joke, it really is the best time to talk movies.
Back when you were Hollywood Blake Stubbs, you know, you at least had, yeah, where I would do the math. I'm like, well, it's 3 a.m. here, but it's only 1 a.m. out in California, so it wasn't so bad. Well, now it is officially just as bad as it really is.
Right, because he's here in the central time zone.
Yeah, you're down in, I think, Springfield or something. So here's the thing. The movies that are out there now are all around the country in the theaters, some of the biggest ones now, and there has been kind of, we talked about it before we actually got on the air with the previous show, is that this is one of those where it is getting kind of mixed reviews. We're getting, at least from people who are seeing it. I'm not sure from the reviewing community how it's gone. You'll fill us in on that. But some people are kind of liking this new DC Justice League movie, and then some are like, not liking it.
Yeah. Well, from the critical standpoint, there's a bit of a stink with this one. So Rotten Tomatoes, which every moviegoer in this country knows, is sort of the basic metric. You know, it kind of gives a sense of, is this movie good or is this movie bad? Because it's based on an aggregate of critical reviews. And they did not release the tomato meter score up until the day that this came out in theaters. And usually that's not the case. Usually this can come out, that number will come out a couple of days early and people already have a good sense. There was not so much an embargo on critical reviews. You could go out and find your favorite critic and read them. But to get a sense of what the pool of critics were saying, you had to wait until the day of. And the number was quite low the day it came out. I believe it was at about a 48%. And when I last checked, it was at about a 40. Not a critical favorite, Justice League. Which has been somewhat par for the course, save for Wonder Woman, with the DC Universe films.
Well, the person that we talked to before we came on the air who had seen it, his critique of it wasn't necessarily, you know, because some people are coming down on some of these movies because they aren't the Marvel movies, right? So they're just, you right. try to compare them both, I guess it's impossible not to, and people just happen to love the other ones, and if it's not that, well, then it must not be nearly as good. But he came down on something that usually is seen as kind of a hallmark on the positive side for these movies. He said the special effects, and I guess we've jumped the shark on those, he said it was too special effects-y. Is that possible?
I think it is, especially when you have certain things that get rushed. And if you followed the production timeline for Justice League, the word that I used in a previous discussion for, I believe, WGN Plus, at least, you'll hear a little bit more in-depth about this movie and goes on for quite a while. The word is embattled. This production was directed originally by Zack Snyder, who did Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. He's also adapted other properties such as 300. He did Watchmen. Zack Snyder was at the helm, and tragedy struck his family when his daughter, very, very sad story, took her own life. And so he stepped back and removed himself from the director's chair and his producer responsibilities. And then Joss Whedon, who, as you mentioned before, people sort of compare these to Marvel movies. Many will know specifically from giving us the first and second Avengers films. He stepped in and sort of took over the director's chair. There were massive reshoots. Henry Cavill came in, and to get to the special effects element, Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, was already knee-deep in filming another movie where he grew a very large mustache. And if you don't know the story, they had to digitally remove facial hair from Superman, who, by the way, none of us should have known was in the movie, but because this was a big story, it was spoiled very early on. So, yeah, and it doesn't, to the trained eye, it's a very big giveaway. And I think that that's just one small thing. But, yeah, this movie relies very heavily on CGI effects.
Wait a minute.
Sometimes to its detriment.
Blake, have we become too complacent where we won't even bother shaving our mustache? You know, well, let's fix it in post.
Well,
come on.
See, yeah, that was actually a big, I get to use this word. I'm so happy. It was quite the kerfuffle, because his agreement, to be available to do reshoots was totally okay. Like, to find the time for him to do it. The problem was the character he was playing had to have very specific facial hair, and the studio that was in charge of that said, look, we will give you Henry Cavill, but he can't shave. That is the one caveat. And so they said, well, we'll just remove it digitally. But then if you follow the timeline of when that happened, that was within this calendar year, and usually a movie of this caliber is done well in advance. So there were special effects that were, by some measure, rushed, and audiences with trained eyes are seeing them, and they're not too happy about it.
What the? That's like the craziest. That's like the most unnecessary way to screw up a movie is the mustache on the reshoots. You know, that the fact that we're talking about it, and that it's enough of a deal that you noticed it and other trained eyes. And then, right? It's just like, you think you can get that right, you know, but I know we've got some friends that work in the special effects, industry. And for some of the, I remember when he had some things to do, or they had some things rushed, as far as project wise, and they were trying to get through some of the either Fantastic Four or the X-Men movies. And some of the things were rushed, and you could sort of tell, right, that the quality was a little different.
Yeah, and especially in this case, what I think was the biggest detriment is not the fact that, you know, the actor playing this character had facial hair and they digitally removed it, and some people say he has this, like, Botox lip, or others are saying it's this poorly, you know, computer-generated lip. The problem is that this Superman being a part of this film is a very big spoiler. And it was not something that was, you were not seeing him in trailers up until the final month, when, you know, Cat was out of the bag, so we might as well show him. But it was supposed to be a big reveal, a big unveiling, a big is he or isn't he. And the fact that there was a mustache gate, so to speak, made us aware. And I think that to a lot of audiences, that sort of tainted this film. And, of course, there were other elements like, you know, new director changing seats halfway through production. Actually, it was more than halfway through production. And I read that somewhere Joss Whedon had about a 15 to 20% reshoot rate for what you see in this film. So post-production on all of that stuff was very quick and rushed.
You know what?
And it's not always clear what was and wasn't.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into it in just a second. I know my family got a chance to see it this without me. I was here doing stuff. I was actually doing the live show, but they saw it, and they really liked it. They described it as quote-unquote pretty awesome, and they really enjoyed it. And so maybe the expectations are a little bit different, especially after I think we have different thoughts on what can be done and how to approach these based on the success of Wonder Woman. WGN live here in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 a.m. It is Dane Neal in for Nick DiGilio. Dino Tiberi is with us as well. To my right, Cassara in the studio and on the line as we talk movies with one of my favorite movie review personalities. What would you say? I know you call yourself maybe like a talking head, but you're doing so much more. We're going to be talking head transplants later. So maybe that's appropriate, right? But Blockbuster Blake Stubbs calling us from... Now, are you in Springfield right now? I know you're in the kind of the middle region
Peoria.
Of Illinois. No, he's not in Peoria.
Definitely
in Peoria?
Central Illinois. I'm a Peoria boy, but I'm like from Peoria, but I'm actually in Champaign. So Champaign and Bend.
U of I. Yeah. That's right.
He's in
U of I.
Yeah, he's moving around wherever the movies take him. Right, that's where you'll find Blake Stubbs, and people are heading to these movies, and you know, here's the thing too, and for the DC folks that are getting some of these bad tomato scores, and some of the, you know, lip gate, right? I mean, just think about this. This is not what you wanted, especially when you had the momentum from Wonder Woman. People thought they had turned a corner, right? You were able to build in some of the humor, right, that you've got from the Marvels. You're building in some of these characters and people start, you know, because you have, I think, the blueprints for success. You've got, you know, these are A-list superheroes, right? These are people everybody grew up with and that have a great, and then on the Batman side, you've got, you know, a character that has been in some of the biggest and kind of iconic movies in the genre. And so to have them kind of get together, there was high hopes. The family thought it was pretty good. I'm not sure maybe what they were watching. They certainly didn't know. No one said anything like, but with the lip. You know, they didn't say anything about Lipgate.
Right.
But were there things? Because also, too, is, you know, when the previous show, they described it, they mentioned a lot of positive things. They said Gal Gadot, that she was great. You know, they mentioned, you know, some of the other characters that they really liked. But ultimately, they just didn't like the film.
I was going to say, that's really the camp that I fall in. I trust me, I want these to be good. I want to enjoy these films because they're huge and they are providing us something, you know, fans, comic book fans, or even just, you know, comic book film fans, you know, the type of environment we want to be in where the best of the best are on screen together. And there's hopefully a great story, you know, to bring them together, to put them on screen and let the spectacle unfold. The thing that I know I'm unflinching about with all of the DC universes, I'm very big on who they have cast in each one of these roles. Henry Cavill as Superman was the first one we really got for this big kickoff. You know, Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman, and I don't want anybody to think that anyone can take that away from her. She's perfect. The Jason Momoa as Aquaman is quite good, what we get of him. Ray Fisher as Cyborg is also, I think, one of the more under, you know, in all the discussions I'm hearing and reading and everything, he's being less talked about. But I'm a big fan of his work. And then the other thing is, you know, Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne in Batman. I was big about it, even with Dawn of Justice, you know, being a big miss of a film. But I love Batfleck, and I want more Batfleck. And I think that he is bringing something to the character for their rendition of Batman that is fresh and interesting.
What is it about Ben Affleck that he's like the Bennifer? He's Batfleck.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, he lends himself to these combo nickname things.
It's one of those things where I don't know how to look. As long as the internet's going to be out there to turn something into a meme, I don't think this guy's ever going to have it easy. That's the best way I can describe it. There's always going to be a way to turn it into something. But Batfleck, when somebody unveiled that, I was like, all right, I'm good. He has to prove himself. And then he did, so now Batfleck is a good thing, in my book, at least.
We've got to take a break in just a minute, and then we've got to send it to news. When we come back, we're going to have a lot more Blake Stubbs. Blake, I would love to get into a little bit, because anytime you enter, you introduce a new character into some of these movies, you have all of those purists out there that are thinking like, hey, this is done right, or this isn't done right, or this should be done differently, you know, whether it's, you know, for Guardians of the Galaxy, like Yondu with the Finn, you know. Right. There's a lot of ways that people anticipate their character kind of being brought to the big screen in this new incarnation. And so you've got Cyborg, who's kind of been on the second string. He's been like the minor leagues, right, of superheroes. Right. Then you got Aquaman, who, I mean, Aquaman was, he's not really a frontline guy because, you know, he always had kind of limited power, you know, because they always had him in the cartoon for Super Friends.
Right.
He was always running around, but it was only like a rare occasion when he could like do the whole, you know, kind of the radar range to the dolphins, you know, and then have it really matter. They did a lot of on land crime fighting back then. So, but I think people are probably excited to see those guys come to the forefront.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, with fresh faces and really good energy. As far as Aquaman goes, I don't know of anyone who is unhappy with Jason Momoa as this character and what they've done, you know, in bringing it to the big screen. And this is our first introduction. So if we're going to talk a little more about it, we're going to need to open up a fresh conversation because this is actually one of the biggest positives, I think, about Justice League.
Yep, we're going to talk about that. Plus, we'll talk about maybe the ability for each one of these movies, because I think that's where that whole Marvel blueprint, where they have these guys together, and then they can all do their own individual kind of franchises as well. So we'll talk about that in just a bit. Seven 720 WGN, live. Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. The Nick DiGilio Show. Danielle in until 5. And the nephew of Larry from Aurora, Dino Tavari, to my right. As well, Casera in the booth on the line with us, talking Nick's one of his favorite topics is movies, of course, and we are talking with one of our favorite guys, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, kind of breaking down, you know, just the, I guess, the difficulties, some of the good side, the upside, some of the downside, and the pitfalls of trying to make a blockbuster superhero movie these days. And the DC folks, they thought they had it dialed in. It looks as though they didn't. They let the mustache and some other things get away from them. But there's still so many cool characters out there that people know and love and are excited to see. And so before we went to the break, we were talking about Aquaman. And it's neat to have kind of Aquaman come in, and we all remember, I remember him as, you know, watching the cartoon The Super Friends, and Aquaman had usually, if I remember correctly, and I'm closing my eyes right now, he had like a yellow skin tight kind of workout shirt with some scales, and he had green leggings, and I think didn't he have little like wings or flippers on his ankles? I can't remember exactly. Blake, am I right?
Yeah, and I know that he had green pants that were very scaly and, like, an orange top and blonde hair, but, like, you know, a lot of people, Robot Chicken specifically, used to very much riff on him, you know, how useless he was outside of anything, you know, wet. And that was basically it.
Yeah. So bringing him into the movie here, through the trailers, where I've gotten to see a totally different kind of look. And, yeah, he looks kind of cool. Dino's holding up a picture where he's kind of in action. And he looks okay with his orange top or blouse, as you would say, Blake. But this one looks kind of has sort of a, like an ancient kind of Poseidon-y kind of feel to it, right? He looks way scarier than the Aquaman we grew up with.
He does. There's sort of that's the design aesthetic that they went for with the Atlanteans. But the thing about this Arthur Curry character, this Aquaman, is that he is considered much younger than his contemporaries in Atlantis. So his like bad boy demeanor, you know, by their standards is more, you know, laid back and cool, and he doesn't really fit in with them. And so that's why I think, you know, Momoa is bringing an energy to this that makes it fresh, that makes it fun. And I feel like he's the kind of actor, especially when you watch interviews with him and you see, you know, how excited he is to be playing this part. I don't think there's any other way this guy could play this part. And I think that it is, you know, one positive note that I would disagree with anybody who says otherwise about Justice League. This is a good thing. This actor playing this part is good, and I'm eager to see where it goes from here, much like when they introduced us to Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, and she instantly won everyone over in a film that wasn't seen very, you know, positively, critically or by fan reaction. But then she got her own movie, and it was very well received and is a very great film to watch in a big theater with a crowd or at home.
I know that we're thinking, I'm sure lots of fans out there are looking forward to the next Wonder Woman movie, like independent kind of feature film where she is highlighted. Is there, whether it's Cyborg or whether it is, you know, Aquaman, did they lay the groundwork for that kind of film coming up? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, what's, as useless as Aquaman may have been in many crime-fighting situations, you know, you'd have to maybe, what, go kind of backstory, retro, like a young, you know, Aquaman growing up and then kind of, like you said, finding his way and deciding he was going to break out on his own, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that Aquaman, at least, we get a nice glimpse of his standing with Atlantis, you know, him sort of claiming a birthright and where we're going to see that develop and go. This film doesn't necessarily want to give us too much of that. It just gives us enough of the character, and we get to know him throughout the film. In the case of Cyborg, there are still a lot of questions, and I think that there's at least enough intrigue there to say, okay, this is a guy who, you know, is getting used to what abilities he has and is trying to have battle an existential crisis of, but I died, but I didn't, back and forth, and his usefulness and what he wants to do with the gifts that he's given. And then, of course, you have Wonder Woman, who now is sort of battling this idea of leading and being a very public sort of figure, as opposed to this live in the shadows, sort of save people when she can, and, you know, never ignore her gifts and ability to use them. But at the same time, you know, she can be something bigger. And then, you know, of course you have Batman, you know, Ben Affleck. We still don't have a standalone Batman film. So I think for this iteration of Batman, there's still a lot of question of whether or not Ben Affleck's going to play the part. And that's, you know, not been confirmed 100% one way or another. But, then you also have Ezra Miller, you know, who's playing the Flash. And we have a Flash on television played by Grant Gustin, who is widely acclaimed for his work. But when you step into the big screen world, they wanted to have a fresh take to fit this dynamic. And so Ezra Miller, who's a very talented young actor, is giving us sort of a very idiosyncratic Barry Allen that, is just very comic relief to some of the more serious angles that the DC universe has tackled. And, I'm sort of really intrigued to see where that property goes more than any, because that's such a, okay, really, we've seen very, very little, if at all, any of this character prior to. I think he makes a bit of a, not to steal one from Aquaman, but I think he makes a bit of a positive splash. And I think that, you know, again, there's things that are positive that can be built off of, but this film sort of feels like it's rushed. They're giving you the team-up movie after only two prior films, as opposed to the case with its contemporary across the street, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which gave us several, and we knew who every character was prior to their introduction.
Right. Yeah.
Save for a couple, you know, save for a couple that were introduced with very specific purposes. It's a different way of handling it, and I think that it's a harder sell for DC. And I think that's a big reason why it's not performing as well as one would have hoped.
The comparison on the Flash character, at least the people that have seen it, they kind of compared it to kind of the younger, more comic Spider-Man version that we've got in Marvel today. So, you know, yeah. And then so that's kind of he's kind of like that, right? Kind of like a young, quirky character.
Yes, who has a hard time being social. And is very much into proving his father's innocence, although that, by the end of the film, you know, still feels kind of like a second thing. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't really get a full explanation of who he is and why he is. We just got who he is. And we had to take it for what it was. So I'm eager to see where they go with it. I know that film is going to be quite a ways off. I think it was supposed to be out this next year, but it's been delayed. So maybe it's because they're going back to the drawing board and making sure that whatever they put out in these individual properties going forward, given what transpired with trying to get this film made and out there for its release date, that they right all whatever wrongs, you know, that need or address concerns that need to be addressed.
Yeah, you got to get these things right. I mean, if, you know, the common average eyes be able to pick these things off in the movies, I think the next one they're going to learn from their mistakes, hopefully, and get that one right.
Like you just say, like everybody shave. Let's do that. Well, here's the thing too, and let's use our predictive powers, is because when you're bringing this up, and of course the way that he's been portrayed in the past, Aquaman is limited. I can't even imagine like his standalone film. The only thing I can think of as far as the premise of the film is that there's maybe there's a leak, you know, Exxon Valdez kind of situation, and Aquaman,
yeah,
you know, jumps in there, or you have, you know, underground pipeline or something. Maybe you have like a crack in the crust of the earth, and he needs to, like, you know, something like that. the Guppy years.
Guppy, sure, yeah.
From the 219, yeah. I mean, you're going to go back, right, and you're going to talk about how,
right,
you know, you just go a little, what was the name of that one, that Nemo, Finding Nemo. That was a great movie. I think
Finding Nemo. Some
cues from there.
Do you take, you know, maybe as a young lad, he's communicating with a dolphin or something? Is that, where do we start here? That seems
And power-wise, Dino, I'm glad you brought it up. Is that what, does he just have that same ability to get fish to do what he wants him to, or does he have some other skills?
Well, that really doesn't play in Justice League. It's really all about, you know, how skilled of a fighter he is. Yes, water is something he has control over, but his ability to be sort of like a demigod, which you know, is sort of an established thing that Wonder Woman is as an Amazon, he kind of fits that role, as opposed to just, oh, well, you know, if there isn't water around, he's kind of useless. He holds his own. He fights, you know, very well, and it's one of those things where I was going to say that is another plus they didn't necessarily just give us an Aquaman tease. They gave us an Aquaman who is a lawyer, who is able to, you know, hold his own. And while he may not be able to, you know, knock out Superman with one punch, he can hold his own. He can fight. And he's got a demeanor and a cool factor, especially given that new look, that I think will draw audiences to theaters.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite the foibles of Justice League, I don't think Jason Momoa's property as Aquaman, you know, being that front man, is going to be, you know, problematic. I think he's going to have an okay transition.
Yeah, you hope that they'll be able to, just like Iron Man kind of hit on and became like this huge hit all by itself, that they'll hit on one of these. Maybe they've done that already with Wonder Woman. I think that they have. Maybe they'll find one or two more. Blake, when we come back, we're going to take a break. We've got to check the weather and all that. When we come back, we're going to get into the, we found out DC, all the things they're doing wrong, some great stuff happening on the Marvel side that people are kind of universally enjoying. Wow. 720 WGN. Live here in the Allstate Showcase studio, Nick DiGilio Show, Daniel in until 5, along with Dino Tiberi, Casera in the booth, on the line. And this is, Casera, this is like legitimate, bona fide, superhero-type music, right?
Yeah, it is. It's actually from the Justice League.
See, look at that. So you got the soundtrack. Anything, any problems you may have, Blake, with the soundtrack?
No, I know that, you know, it felt like it was in line with what we got in Batman Superman Dawn of Justice. It felt like it was, I mean, this is Danny Elfman. So, you know, Danny Elfman never phones it in. That man's one of the greats. So, yeah, I'm glad that it's back. I did just read an interesting article, though, if you want to talk about movie music, where he's not too happy that, you know, some of the great, you know, superhero style themes, you know, things that we would hum when the movies would come on, that's kind of been abandoned. I mean, think about it. He did Batman. You know, he did, and then you had John Williams do Superman. You know, those are scores that people remember. The music in this is not bad, but it's definitely not the most, you know, trumpeting or memorable thing by the end of the film. You're more focused on the spectacle and the visuals and everything else.
Yeah, Danny Elfman, the connection, Dane, my sister.
You're related to Danny Elfman?
No, I actually know, my sister actually knows Danny Elfman. He has a violinist that my sister has been involved with representing over the years, and so there's a connection there with them. He's come a long way since Oingo Boingo, I know that.
Some would disagree.
But that's great, though, he's able to do the themes for those. He's a very talented man.
Yeah, you hit on it, Blake, and Dino, too, is that, like, he has made that transition from, you know, what they were kind of like a crazy, fun punk band, right, with music that was important, and he's turned into kind of the modern-day John Williams, right, where he's there just, you know, responsible for so many iconic soundtracks that really make those movies. Here's a little bit of the differences as we get into some of the Marvel films that, and you have just a totally different philosophy. You've got these big, you know, orchestral, you know, kind of scores put together that are big, kind of gladiator-esque, as opposed to, you know, Guardians, which just takes kind of really interesting and fun musical choices that kind of brings that into it, and they're such big parts of kind of the feel of those movies.
Yeah, and definitely, especially, you know, when you take, and again, I mentioned Batman, but Danny Elfman also did the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, which were also very, you know, big theme. You knew it was a Spider-Man theme when you heard it. But nowadays, things are a little bit different. They're more music that's set to suit the mood in the film. And if my memory serves, Danny Elfman was not the original composer for Justice League. It was actually, I believe, going to be a score done by Junkie XL. So this was something that, you know, was a change up as well. And I'm not going to say last minute, but it was a change that was made throughout the course of trying to make this big tentpole, biggest property DC's put out yet, because we're putting all our eggs in one basket film.
A lot of
what was said didn't actually happen. It's a different film than we were originally led to believe in a lot of respects.
It's the best laid plans, and it's tough to see it all thrown together here, especially with so much on the line, and again with the momentum of Wonder Woman. Well, on the Marvel side, you know, Ragnarok has been, you know, kind of universally embraced as far as those movies, the Thor movies, is very fun, irreverent, maybe almost a little bit too funny, right? Where maybe the jokes kind of overtook some of that whole, you know, galactic battle type movie that you expect from a Thor.
Absolutely. The one big thing I know from reading about Thor, the making of Thor, and how this Thor came to be, because yes, it is. It's vastly different from its two predecessors. And there's some differences in the Thor character, even from the Avengers films. The big thing was they wanted to reinvent this character. They wanted Thor to be fresh, and they didn't want Thor to be, you know, boring compared to his teammates, you know, Iron Man. Specifically, they wanted to give him new life, a new look, a new style, and in order to do that, they wanted to sort of take him a place he'd never been, have a visual style that was totally new, and, you know, put jokes in there, make it funny, show that, you know, he's not just this sort of stoic character, because again, that's also part of his nature as a character, is that, you know, he's supposed to be this, like, fun-loving, you know, character, you know, person from Asgard who has to earn his right as, you know, maybe their rightful king one day. And to give him a little more humanity, is not a bad thing. And Taika Waititi, who directed the film, who is a brilliant comedian in his own right and is actually in the film as a voice, the voice of Korg, one of the, you know, really hilarious parts of the film to his own credit, definitely came in with a different outlook. And I think that was also kicked off by Chris Hemsworth, you know, who's played Thor now multiple times. And he said, I want to make this different. I want to make it engaging and something new so that people don't just come in and expect the same thing.
Well, you know,
and to their credit, it worked.
Well, Chris Hemsworth, of course, I mean, he is all of those Thor-like things. You know, he's big, he's giant, he's handsome, he's very Thor-like, right? But he does have some comedic chops. We enjoyed him in Ghostbusters, right, when he did a little bit of that. And then they bring in some of these everyday situations that you just, it's that whole suspense of, you know, hey, you're slipping on another planet somewhere in this gladiator type situation, but yet he says, you know, we know each other, we're friends from work, right? It was like a normal thing,
right?
That we would just say, except, you know, not in that context. It's crazy.
It brought sort of like a new innocence to the character in a way, but it also just brought this whole like, okay, this is a totally different take than what we've seen in the past. And that is such a welcome change, especially, you know, if this is the third, you know, individual film that Thor as a character is going to have. It definitely, you know, brought new life to it, made it enjoyable. And yeah, I mean, this one I think is there's no question. This one's a hit, in just about every way. And I think, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, it maybe being, you know, too full of effects, I thought they did a pretty good job with it. It, you know, it didn't necessarily, I think, have the budget of an Avengers film, but it, no, it didn't. It was $180 million. The Avengers films run about $200 to $250. But this one definitely, you know, they cast some great actors to play these new parts, specifically Tessa Thompson, who I think can just be in everything. I'm a very big fan of her work. And, you know, we got Carl Urban joining the team, and he brings some comedy to the table, but also, you know, we get our first look at Mark Ruffalo as, you know, Bruce Banner in the Hulk since the Avengers Age of Ultron, and so it's sort of a team-up movie, you know, kind of like a buddy cop film in a way, and of course Tom Hiddleston, you know, everybody loves Tom Hiddleston as Loki, and he's back too. So, you know, this one, the one big thing I think that could be said about both Justice League and Thor Ragnarok is that the villains, you know, are maybe the difference makers here. You know, Steppenwolf, voiced by the great Kieran Hines in Justice League, just, it's a very, no one cared about that villain in the theater I was in. Cate Blanchett got much more to work with in Thor Ragnarok as Hela, you know, the goddess of death. But again, it, you know, she's kind of a means to an end character to get to the next step in the Marvel phase plan. So, she does a good job. It's a decent enough character for Thor to battle for sure. But at the same time, there's so much more going on in the movie. You know, that it's tying all of those ends together so that it's one giant, you know, big picture, not just one movie that you're sitting and watching, which is something that Marvel gets right and DC is still struggling with.
It's neat how they're able, you know, we have become so familiar with these characters that they can go ahead and kind of tweak them, and it sort of just seamlessly happens. You look at the Loki situation, it's kind of, you know, that whole, like, blood is thicker than water thing. We're able to accept that he's, like, good guy, bad guy, good guy, sort of bad guy, you know, crazy relative guy, you know, and you just kind of roll with it. And then he's still a big part and kind of one of those beloved figures. He's got some great humor and, you know, and funny sides going on in those movies as well.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, too, we're much easier in terms of being, sorry, it's much more easier to be accustomed to the Marvel side of things, because this was the 17th, I believe, by my count, film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've come through 17 films, and we know everybody, and the new faces are oftentimes introduced so well. You know, and coming up next, you know, I mean, I left Thor Ragnarok after being, you know, hit with the big trailer for Black Panther, which comes out in February. And that movie, I think, is going to be absolutely outstanding just based on the fact that all the pieces have lined up properly to make that one work. The casting choices, the director, the writer, you know, the music, everything is going to be good. And audiences, I think, are going to be, well, they're going to be salivating for Black Panther, because it just, I mean, the introduction we had to the character in Captain America Civil War was stellar.
I'm sure.
And so knowing that he's getting his own property and getting it done right is a very welcome, you know, positive.
Blake, I'm sure that's going to be built into the trailers, that audiences are salivating for Black Panther. WGN Live Allstate Showcase Studio. Nick DiGilio, Dane in for Nick until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberi, the nephew of Larry from Aurora. We're like a tribute band.
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're in the booth spinning the hits.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm proud to be his nephew. And, you know, my uncle was a big movie buff, too. He really enjoyed watching various movies.
What was Larry from Aurora's favorite superhero?
You know what? That's a good question, because I don't really remember watching.
Would have been one of the wrestling stars of the AWA?
Probably more so than one of the, or maybe the original Superman. I don't know. I'm not sure.
George Reeves.
Yeah, but the black and white Superman. I'm not sure. I think that might have been it.
Yeah. Before we go to the next break or somewhere in there, for Esmeralda and for Vic, we're going to want to get their favorite superhero of all time. Maybe the one that they wanted to dress up for Halloween, or maybe if you had some action figures, right? You know, our action figure when it comes to talking about the movies is Blake Subs. Blake, welcome back to WGN. What was your favorite superhero? Did you have one?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's a tough one. That's like asking me what my favorite movie is, although I'll give you an answer. For me, it was probably Batman. Growing up, because I was about 4 years old when Michael Keaton's Batman hit the big screen, and I did, you know, grow up seeing Adam West on reruns. So, I mean, Batman was always there from, like, the very beginning, and it's hard for me to disassociate, you know, my favorite with the one that I've known the longest. So I would definitely have to say Batman.
Yeah, and Batman used, you know, he had the sort of the cerebral. You know, he was very smart, right? He would kind of outsmart some of his his foes. You know, he had the utility belt. He had a big bank account, too, right? Because he was a
millionaire Bruce Wayne, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, coming up, we've talked of 17. I cannot believe it. 17 Marvel movies have happened, and that is amazing. I don't know how many Star Wars movies have there been. You know, they should never stop making them, because they're always interested. They've got a fan base. It's built in as far as support that is for those movies. You know, there's fans of all the different kind of incarnations of it, and they have been so different. You've seen some of those originals to the ones we have now, to some of the, you know, the Jar Jar Binks era, you know, where you had kind of, you know, different movies in the Star Wars world. But as people anticipate this one and they've kind of mapped out these episodes, what's coming up and what do you foresee?
Well, here's the thing. So the guy who's directing this also wrote it, Rian Johnson, who's known from specifically known from Looper and Brick. Those are two films of his that have very big audiences and are, you know, very well made films. The big thing is Disney has so much confidence in this young man that he's going to be developing his own Star Wars trilogy outside of The Last Jedi, which is the film coming up here, released in less than a month. So when you say, you know, they should never stop making them, I don't think they're going to. They're going to have the anthology films. They started with Rogue One. Up next, the next anthology film is going to be the Han Solo film, which, you know, had a big director change, but they did it early enough where now it seems like it's going to be okay. The big thing, though, is whatever this new trilogy is going to be, that's up in the air. And I, knowing who it's in the hands of, who Disney has instilled their confidence in, I'm a big Rian Johnson fan. I'm eager to see where that goes. And I love the Star Wars universe. I don't just love these, you know, the Star Wars characters that we know in the trilogy. Now, I would always argue I'm a purist and, you know, the prequel films, I try to ignore them because they're just not my flavor. But to be quite honest with you, if the prequel trilogy are the types of films that, you know, get young people involved and they love Star Wars, I'm all for it. And I think that, you know, there's plenty of storytelling that can be done in a galaxy far, far away.
So what do you think is going to happen with this one? Is this one going to be as well received? I know on the special effects side, and we've had kind of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the mustache worthy, you know, during this conversation, but they have done some amazing things, you know, in order to bring back some of those stars from the past, or bring back the past of the stars into the future. And
yeah.
I know that the last time we had talked, you said they weren't going to do as much of that coming up, but
right.
But what are you seeing?
This one, to be quite honest, I am, look, we're still a month away, and part of this is going to be me speaking not just from, you know, trying to talk about a movie that isn't out yet, but all, you know, as a critic or someone who loves talking about the industry, but also as a fan. I think this film is going to be huge in a positive way, and I think that it's a chance where they made The Force Awakens, and The Force Awakens had to really just bring Star Wars back to the forefront, okay? And a lot of people, you know, didn't love it because of the fact that it felt like it was telling A New Hope all over again. From all that I've seen, and I've tried to watch every trailer without having it ruin my experience ahead of time, from knowing, reading Rian Johnson, you know, interviews, tweets, you know, because he's a very active person on Twitter, this is going to not necessarily be an homage, but this is going to be a big step forward. And if your phrasing early on is a big step forward, I think that this is going to be a film, given that it's the second installment of this, you know, final trilogy of the original saga. Much like Empire Strikes Back, big things are going to happen in this film. There will probably be some serious tragedy. There will probably be some twists. There are definitely going to be some big stakes moves going on between what I would call, I guess, well, what we would all call now the Resistance and the First Order, because it's no longer just the Rebellion and the Empire. I think that, you know, we as an audience are going to be in for a treat. And I would be very surprised if this film does anything other than deliver what it's supposed to. And I would say that because Disney has now given a whole trilogy to Rian Johnson to do, you know, pretty much what he wants to do. He's proven himself, and they've got confidence in his abilities.
When you look at this, and this is something that started, what was it, like 1977 when the first one came out, or something
yes.
along those lines.
Yes.
And so you've got multiple generations that are able to get into it, and it has followed a bunch of different formats, different characters, sort of a central theme that you could kind of tie yourself to. But the movies have been very different, and they have all found their fan base. Is it to the point now, Blake, do you think that no matter, you know, and they're in good hands, right? They have people that have
sure.
grown up
yeah.
on the movie. So you don't get a director in there that just doesn't get it, you know, has his own vision, and it's just
right.
not what's going on. Everybody has grown up with it. Is that they really can't do, I don't want to say can't, but they really aren't going to do anything wrong. So even if it is totally different, fans will see it as kind of new and refreshing. Whereas those first movies that they made after the original three, there was a lot of risks of, are you going to do it right?
Right. And the big thing, too, was that, you know, this is in the hands of an entity that wants its properties to succeed and be something that fans truly enjoy. And now, look, I'm not going to say that that was not George Lucas's intent when he made the prequel films, you know, because, again, they're not really held in the regard that the original trilogy that he made on the same level. The thing with those films is that, you know, those were entirely funded by him. They were made sort of in isolation. They were only under his purview and what he wanted to do. And in the end, it's like, well, maybe there should have been a little different approach, a big different approach to what would have made these films succeed. And, you know, again, I just sort of said Justice League isn't very good, but there were things that I liked about it. You know, Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi, if Disney announced tomorrow that they're going to make a Kenobi film, he's the right age, he's ready to go, and he definitely has the demeanor and the character. I would be 100% on board for that, especially under the Disney label. And this is one of those things where a lot of people were worried when Disney bought this property. They weren't quite sure it was going to work out, but I figured it was going to be either really great or really bad, and I'm glad that it was really great.
We knew they'd make a theme park. We knew that there would be an endless supply of lunchboxes and action figures. We knew they would get that part of it right. Yep. It looks as though on the movie side they're doing that right as well. And Obi-Wan Kenobi is a hero, right? And people have kind of weighed in with that. And also Underdog, someone kind of weighed in that Underdog was one of their heroes. And then also, too, 38 states in Canada, the signal for WGN is very vast at this time of day. And Keith in Kansas has weighed in support of the Justice League. And so we'll talk about that. See, you talk violin, there's some aggressive violin. It's 720 WGN, Nick DiGiulio Show, Dane Neal in until 5, along with Dino Tiberi here, the nephew of Larry from Aurora, the physical embodiment. And we're talking superheroes. We're going to talk with Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake, in just a second. Esmeralda, what is your, did you have a favorite superhero, or, you know, or was it just, someone in your life could be your, did you have an uncle that was maybe a superhero to you, or did you have someone in a costume?
Oh, well, I'm going to go straight up with the costume. I have found a newfound love for Wonder Woman. I wasn't too into it as a kid, but watching that first Wonder Woman movie, that was amazing.
It was so good. Like, my daughters absolutely loved it. My wife absolutely loved it. Well, my wife cries in almost everything, even like after school specials. She's just a softie. And so she cries, but she just thought it was just so great, right? Everybody is loving that movie.
Oh, for sure. No, I definitely cried I teared up in the beginning just watching like just a bunch of amazing women fighting and just being like strong figures for little girls and for just women in general. It was very emotional.
Yep, empowering. All right, thanks, Esmeralda. We'll get Vic Vaughn. Maybe he's got thoughts on that as well before the end of the show. But someone from the 773 said Zorro and not Esteban, the infomercial late night guitar salesman, who also is Zorro would have kicked the superheroes' butts. And he said he's got a true story. And then the men and women of the U.S. Marines are also our superheroes in real life. Of course, that
no
is
no doubt about that.
That is true. And Blake Stubbs on the line, our superhero when it comes to talking movies. So that was one of the upsides, right? Is that Wonder Woman did kind of. I mean, a lot of ladies, girls, they just love it. It's a super empowering film. Other than being entertaining, right?
Absolutely. No, this Wonder Woman was a film that I left the theater and I just wanted to talk about it with everybody. And I'm not the only one. It was a film that definitely, I think, showed all of the best parts of what being a hero is all about. I don't think that it left any of that, you know, by the wayside as well. Because, you know, the character of Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, was sort of really coming into her own. So when you think about it as a coming of age story, considering that, you know, she's not, you know, young the way we think of people being young, she's young compared to her contemporaries and who she grew up around and who raised her, and coming to terms also with, you know, what she is. It sort of answered all the big questions, you know, the who, what, where, when, and why. And so when you left that film, it was like, okay, this is a very big step in the right direction for the DC universe. Hopefully they just parlay that right into Justice League. But I think that the, you know, the wheels on the machine were already rolling for Justice League. And so, you know, when tragedy struck and then the director change happened and then the music change happened and then, you know, reshoots had to happen and you just, it was a film that was really having an uphill battle compared to Wonder Woman, which I think was just a hit from beginning to end on every level.
And it had a lot of the humor in there. It was great. Well, entertainment comes in all shapes and sizes. You know, some of it's empowering and uplifting and also entertaining. Yeah. And some of it, Dino and I, in totally separate households, but we both got a chance to see a movie that we are looking forward to the sequel for is we watched Deadpool, and this is a character that I don't know if it's empowering or uplifting in any way. Certainly entertaining, a little disturbing, off-putting in many different ways as well, but undeniably entertaining. I mean, of course, if you've got to be a certain age, I had to tell little Maxwell to leave the room a number of times. He wasn't there watching. Occasionally, he'd try to sneak in and look around the side, because Deadpool is not for kids, you know, as many superheroes are.
No.
But Blake, I know you loved that movie, as did so many people in the entertainment industry. Are we going to get another one with Ryan Reynolds?
Definitely. They've actually just started putting out the official trailers and marketing with a very bizarre Bob Ross tribute, with Deadpool wearing the Afro wig and wearing the Bob Ross attire and painting pictures. I mean, again, not for kids, but definitely one of those movies that, you know, they made it for so little money and it made so much, rightfully so, because it was great.
But with Bob Ross, the here's a happy tree. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, exactly that. And I say this knowing that people are either looking this up right now or you're going to look this up as soon as you get a break, because it is hilarious and bizarre and weird, but then it jumps right into an actual like teaser for what Deadpool 2 is going to have. But it also is smart because it doesn't spoil anything. It just shows a few clips and, you know, you get excited and now you're ready. So, you know, another thing, too, and not to just totally just rail against Justice League. If people are going to go see this and have fun, that's what's really important. Okay. As a, you know, a critic, I can't necessarily say I would easily recommend it knowing that Thor Ragnarok is also playing in theaters. But at the same time, I know that the marketing for Justice League also spoiled some very big things. And so people, I think, are feeling a little let down by that, maybe. And if you went in totally blind, then you're probably having the true experience of seeing Justice League. I didn't have that luxury.
That sounds I should
do. Inundated with that stuff. Yeah, try to go in blind, I would say.
If you go in blind, you won't be put off by the bad CGI on the mustache, right? Is that what we're saying?
Right. Right. Yeah, basically. I mean, and to give, you know, credence to that, like my girlfriend went to see it with me. She had no idea any of that happened. Didn't know any of it until I told her after the fact. And in the end, her response to the movie was really just, it was okay. I didn't really like it, but it was okay. Like, I'm glad I saw it, but whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, the hemming and hawing and your kind of breakdown of it is pretty true to how I feel about it. You know, like there's things I like, but on the whole, I really didn't.
Well, so. I'm glad you've got a little more to say about it than maybe your girlfriend. You can give her kind of the tutorial on the, it was okay. I kind of liked it. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
It's all right.
And again, it's not really like, I know she left the theater being like, I just want to watch Wonder Woman again. But you know what I mean? Like, that's how she left the movie. So I think that speaks to Wonder Woman in a really positive light.
You know what? As many things that may have gone wrong, enough things went right where, and there are some fans, we've got a number of people that have texted in and called in that are supporters of it, and people support the characters, because I don't know, you could do it wrong 100 times and people are still going to line up, people that are fans of Superman, fans of Batman, that are going to come in and see what they're doing, and they'll get it right, like you had said, Blake, is that you want to enjoy these movies, you want them to be great, and eventually they'll get there. They built in a little bit of the humor. I think that's cool. It'd be neat to see Ben Affleck. Mm-hmm. I appreciate his work, you know, the things that he's done over the years. Don't you, Dino?
I do.
Yeah. See, so there you go. We're holding out hope. We're gonna do this right. So, Blake, before we let you go, give the information on social media so that people can continue this conversation and many others with you on the movies.
Best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. Follow me, at Blake Stubbs. Shoot me a DM or just tweet right at me. I love talking movies, specifically, you know, the big ones that are out right now. I know we're going to be going into Oscar season soon, so I'm really going to be excited to discuss stuff as I see it, which I'm going to be, you know, going into overdrive here very soon for all of that. So, yeah, at Blake Stubbs on Twitter.
And as people get into the holiday season, you and I are going to be in here on Black Friday to kind of give people things that they can do in between the shopping. They can duck out of the Weebolts and head into a theater and enjoy some of these movies coming up. So stay tuned for that. Blake, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Who let the dogs out?
WGN, Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Dane Neal in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. That's a great song. I mean, I don't know how many great songs that are related to our canine friends, man's best friend, so they say, that were also hit songs. Can you think of any other ones?
I'm trying to think. How much was that doggy in the window?
I think that probably was a hit back in the 30s or something.
I'm showing my age there. But
the Three Dog Night, I think, had some hits, but that's a little extended. Well, you know you love your dog, and Dino, you've got a story there that is making the news. This is one of those things, and we lost, and we talked to sat in with Bill Leff last week, and we've lost a number of pets. Some of them aren't on this list as potentially clonable. We lost a pet snake. Right? And we lost a pet toad that was Maxwell's toad, Will Burrito, who unfortunately ate a piece of bark, apparently. And didn't make it. Can't process the bark so well. But then we lost our dog, our family pet, Blue Bear, who was one of our, you know, she was 14 years old, member of the family, preceded all of the kids, and we lost her this summer, too. So now you have an opportunity to, I don't know, I think the natural progression is that you just need to say goodbye and move on. For Cassara in the booth, she said that, pets, as beloved as they may be, maybe don't deserve to be cloned. You know, it's better just to leave it at that.
Leave it alone and move on.
Yeah. But if you want to do it and you have a whole bunch of extra money.
Well, if you have, if you love your dog, then the question then becomes, would you spend $50,000 to clone the dog?
I don't. Well, you know, you think about some of these famous dogs throughout history. You know, that list just goes on and on. You've got Morris the cat, right? You've got Rin Tin Tin,
Lassie.
These are right. Team photo of great animals.
Toto.
Sure. Imagine if you could have Toto running around today. The same guy. I mean, dog.
Well, you know, if you want to get your animal cloned, there's a Texas company that will do it. And if you need to have it's a $50,000 fee. Cats are half the price.
So if you want to be a cat person, maybe that's just where you go. How about clone the cat then?
Yeah, you could clone the cat, of course, and Morris, you know, you name some other ones. But the 6 to 7 month process apparently here for the cloning. But, the veterinarians at Viagen Pets use a process to genetically preserve your pet's DNA and safely maintain it at its cryo storage facility. So they take, you know, the egg and go through the whole process. 6 to 7 months later, you have your cloned animal ready to go.
I wonder if people would do that. I mean, it's a lot of money, so obviously if they can try to, you know, but just like anything else, Dino, I'm sure you remember when VCRs first came out, they were very expensive, and now, well, they don't even exist anymore, so they're probably very reasonable. So hopefully this will get a little bit cheaper, and Rodriguez, one of the doctors there, said that they're assuring you your pet will not be a Frankenstein, it'll be a normal dog, just like any other dog. You'd never know he's a clone puppy. And so that's it. I wonder if the shortcut here would just be to find a dog that's very similar looking. You know, I mean, I wonder how the process works. Obviously, genetically, they're going to pull some DNA and then they're going to try to go ahead and maybe in a petri dish, do they make it or do they take the little embryo and implant it in another dog to be carried? I mean, there's a lot of work here.
Yeah, it just seems to me that you're setting yourself up possibly for some disappointment in the event that dog doesn't measure up to the prior dog once it's cloned. But according to this, it sounds like it's an exact duplicate. So I don't know how that all is going to play out, but 50 grand will get you that opportunity if you want to wait in line and get yourself a cloned animal.
Well, I know that my grandparents, they had like a lucky was the name of the dog. And then there was like a lucky number one and lucky number two. I think there's probably four or five different luckies.
So they lucky were they when they get to five and six?
You know, I don't know. This was over a period of time, so I'm sure some were more lucky than others. But, you know, they were kind of black labs, I think, and that's just what they were. So I don't think there was an intention. Maybe this was just kind of a subtle cloning, right, without all of that science and money involved, is you just get a dog that sort of looks like your other dog, name him the same thing, and then just mentally kind of block out the fact,
the other one's gone.
The other one is gone. And that's kind of the way that you do it. It says here, we've got a text from the 815, the reason dogs don't live nearly as long as humans is so that we can enjoy several of them. And so
that's
maybe
a good point.
It's a variety is the spice of life thing, right? It's like you can have your dog, and then let's say it runs its course, you know, just throughout, and you guys are great partners throughout his lifetime, and then you get a different dog. You know? Dino, do you have a dog? Did your family have a dog growing up?
I don't, but growing up, my mom, we had a lot of pets. I used to accuse her of being the leader of Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, because we had just about every kind of pet you could think of. But dogs were the, always had dogs, whether it was collies, whether it was schnauzers, all different breeds, all different kinds of dogs. The Great Pyrenees was the last ones that she had. She had like four of them at one time, and I know how big those are. They're huge dogs.
So it's like a white Saint Bernard,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And she loved animals, and she really loved dogs a lot, and so that. I always had them. I don't have one. Currently, I haven't had one myself because I just don't feel like it's fair to the animal because I'm not around
and
out a lot. So, you know, it's not. It's one of those things. One day I will get one, though. There's no doubt about it. But right now, it's not.
You can get a fish. You can get a fish.
Yeah, some a little low maintenance. Yeah, that might work. Get something to pass the time. But we've got to
hang out, watch TV with you, watch Deadpool with you. 312-981. 7200. If you've got a pet suggestion for Dino, something that's a little bit low maintenance, we've got. So our family dog had passed away 14 years, just a great dog. And it was tough to lose her and all of those things. The pets we have now, our son Maxwell, he's into all the kind of creepy crawly kind of things. So he loves, had a snake, and we have, some frogs and the toad and some other thing. In fact, we had a tadpole that turned into a frog. And so now that frog his name is Paco. And, and he's there as well. We've got to do the weather one more time, and then we're going to go to break. And when we come back, and this is something that we're going to talk about in depth, because this is happening now. It's kind of along the same lines of not being able to let go, and or maybe trying to right some wrongs, because this is another thing too. Think about it. If your pet, you know, lives its life out, and you just want another one because they only have a lifespan of whatever. But what if your pet was hit by a car? You know, what if your pet had some other situation, struck by lightning? You know,
a tragic ending.
Is allergic to bee stings. You know, who knows what it is,
yeah,
but
right.
Either way, it ends too soon, and you have the ability to kind of, it's obviously a different animal, but you're cloning it, and to be able to extend that experience. Well, on the human side, and I know that, I think John Williams was talking about this with Steve Bertrand a little bit. This was before they had done it. Apparently, the practice, and I'm doing the air quotes, one has happened now, is a head transplant. I think we joked around a little bit, not that it's a joking matter, this is very serious. You want your surgeons, all 12 of them, that are going to be doing the 24-hour surgery for about $100 million, you're going to really want them paying attention. Nothing funny about a head transplant, but I guess they're almost ready to do these.
Wow, there's a lot of details got to be involved in that. I can't even imagine how that's going to
turn
out.
You can imagine it.
I can imagine, but
we'll talk about it after the weather. So they're able to, because think about all the different ways, and we joked around, you know, hey, you could take, you know, Randy Johnson, the pitcher, you know, and put a Greg Maddux, so you've got the mind of Greg Maddux these are just, I think, the athletic applications that would be great. But even just from you imagine, you've seen those machines, Dino, where you don't even have to, like, go work out. You just put this thing, you know, like this electronic things, and it just kind of shocks your abs into shape.
Sure.
Imagine if you could just put your head on a person who's already in shape.
And there you are.
I mean, and then, like, I would, if they could get it down where it was pretty reliable, because you don't want to end up just dying. But once they get the bugs worked out, so to speak, you know, that'll be great. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the weather and all this. Would you ever consider that, Dino? I guess you'd have to, because in here for the listeners, for them to think about it before we come back from this, is they're taking people who they either have disease or they're paralyzed or whatever, and then they're putting a
new head on top. It's like a cherry.
WGN. Daniel here in for Nick DiGilio for a few more minutes until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberi to my right, the nephew of Larry from Aurora, who is a prominent and beloved character in the Nick DiGilio show. So this is great, right?
Yeah.
It's like Jason Bonham coming in and playing with Led Zeppelin. Except, obviously, the rest of Led Zeppelin isn't here, right?
I had several notches to go to get up to the level of my uncle, though. But I'll try to do the best I can.
Oh, stop. Think about this. And when people are trying to take their pet to those next levels and maybe clone their pet, we've had some great insight from the listeners, too, is from the 870, the dog may have the same DNA, but will not have the same experiences. Therefore, it will not be the same as you remember. And we talked about it, joked a little bit, that the dog might not even like you, right?
Because
it doesn't remember throwing the ball around with you. It doesn't remember any of those things.
You gotta reteach the dog the same tricks you did the first time around.
Would you redo a lot of those formative things, like take the same walks to try to get that animal to imprint in that same way? Or just, hey, let's just do something new here.
Well, I think I think you could do a little bit of both. I think you could probably integrate some of the things that happened with the prior dog. And then you're going to have some new experiences with the new dog that'll learn and go forward.
And then from the 815, if your dog, and this is maybe more practical, a little shocking, but maybe more practical. People used to do this kind of stuff. And I think Roy Rogers had his horse Trigger stuffed, right? So you could kind of hang out with him.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So it says if your dog's fur is nice, and this is from the 815, have a taxidermist make a hat for you when they pass away. I don't think you got to, let's say you're not a hat person. Maybe even a pillow or something, maybe more practical that you could, it's a little morbid, right?
Yeah.
And why is the fur nice? Because I think if you remember...
Well, what defines nice? I guess that's the first thing.
Right. Nice fur is in the eye of the beholder.
True.
Right? So then from the 847, so this is related to the other way that people are kind of extending things on the people side is with the head transplant. We're going to get into it. Sergio Canavera has, he says that he has performed the first head transplant, did it on a couple cadavers. He doesn't have a ton of proof, right, because he's keeping it close to the vest, so to speak. And the 847 said that they should call it a body transplant. The head, your brain, is getting a new body. Well, it goes both ways. I think they're taking both sides. So they'll take somebody, let's say, that's brain dead, right, and then they'll put a different head on it. Right. And so, and that person, who has the head that is disease free is the way they described it. Maybe they're paralyzed or maybe their body, is sick. And so I guess you put them both together in concept. You've got
a new body.
You've got a new whole dealio, right?
You know,
hoping, of course, that it quote unquote works, right? You don't want to just, it would be kind of risky, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm not so sure that. This is just, I'm trying to take a look at this real quick to see, is it just one they've done so far and that's it?
Well,
they rehearsed the procedure on two corpses,
mm-hmm.
reconnecting the spinal cord and blood vessels of the head of one cadaver with those on the body of another in an 18-hour experiment last week.
Yep, the next procedure is imminent, and he's going to do that on a living human paralyzed from the neck down. He hasn't released any details, but the idea is, you look at some of the things that we're able to do now that we haven't been able to do before, and now you've got computers and microsurgery and all the things that you should be able to do. I think that the difficulty is obviously with the spine, and making it so that it works. People are paralyzed. If it was easy enough to go ahead and kind of fix that stuff, they probably would be able to fix that stuff.
Right. They would have been fixed already.
Yeah, we've got some problems with that, where you have – but if you've got a situation where you have – somebody who is paralyzed and this is an option where they're looking to do it. Obviously, if it doesn't work, then
that's it.
I think it'd be interesting if they could even keep, and I don't know that they've ever even seen this before, but have they ever been able, no, they haven't, other than maybe a Steve Martin movie, The Man with Two Brains, is they can't, can they keep a head alive? Could they do that? If they'd had like all the right stuff running in and out.
I have no idea how that would even work.
Yeah, well, Sergio Canavera.
Well, he did it.
So here's the Chinese surgeon in aiming to perform the world's first head transplant is defending the controversial procedure, saying similar attacks were leveled at pioneering kidney transplants more than 60 years ago. So this is one of the guys that is working with him. So these guys are working together, Sergio Canavera and then the impronounceable Chinese surgeon. And so they're doing some of these things. So what do you think about this, if they're able to do it? Because even on this, and this is the reason that it's happening in China as opposed to here, is because there's a lot of, you know, ethical kind of moral questions of should you be doing this, even on the cloning side. And we could joke about cloning your pet or, you know, or stuffing, you know, your dog or Trevor, I mean, your Trigger, those kind of things. But when it comes to humans, because we've had a couple of people text in, is that possible to go ahead and do it on humans? I don't think that it is. I think it hasn't worked for whatever reason. It's impossible to do, at least at this point. And then people ask, should you even be doing it at all?
Yeah, do you want to mess around with the, you know, the composition of the human body as it stands right now? To, you know, I see where there's some things would probably, like, if you could cure diseases by doing certain things, that may make sense. But to me, I just think it's, the human body is such a complex organism as a whole. It's, you know, that's probably the main reason why we haven't been able to solve that issue at this point, and they're still working on doing it. So it'll be interesting to see how these things progress and how things work going forward. So, but definitely an interesting story about a head transplant. I would have thought in a million years that would be possible.
Yeah, kind of the head body switcheroo. So Wang said that the primary responsibility was to ensure the safety of the patient. Operation should only be allowed to go ahead if it was humane and been proven viable in animal trials. Because you think that would might be the, try it on a mouse, right? See if you can transplant, right, you know, one mouse to another mouse.
Sure. Mighty mouse to take his head and put it on another mouse.
I mean, I get it, they're small, but maybe that's where you should start. Because the whole idea of doing it on the cadaver first was as like a practice run, because you're like, oh, okay, well, there's a lot going on in here.
Sure. You know? Interesting. I don't What are they going to think of next?
Well, if they can clone, you know, your pets and your animals and bring people back to life and switch their heads around, they'll be able to enjoy a Thanksgiving with you. And I know this is coming up this weekend, or this whole week is kind of Thanksgiving week. And
yeah.
So what does Adino do on Thanksgiving? What are you planning to do on Thanksgiving? And if you could have some of your famous pets of the past with you.
Yeah, we're going to spend some time with some family. I believe my cousin Joe and his wife, Jennifer, are going to have... And my dad and I over. My sister's out of the, and brother out of the country, so I won't be seeing them. They're over in Germany, but so we'll just play it by ear and see what happens. You know, I also probably stop by a few friends the same day and see them. So you know, I'm hardly believing that it's, you know, happening already. It's November.
It's happening.
It's happening this week.
And the turkey side, are you more of a turkey guy? Are you sort of the non-traditional?
No, I really
enjoy the ham.
I enjoy turkey. Man, I enjoy ham. Listen, you've seen me. There's not many things I don't enjoy, but certainly turkey, though. That's going to be on the agenda. There's no question about that.
And, of course, with your dad as well. So you guys are going to get together and have – do you guys enjoy, like, all the normal kind of accoutrements of Thanksgiving, you know, your cranberry sauce and the mashed potatoes? Or do you guys –
I'm sure my cousin will have all the fixings and everything else ready to go. There's no doubt about that. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun to see everybody and then get together for Thanksgiving dinner.
And as we wrap things up, I know for sure Facebook, but also you're doing – traditionally you call a lot of the top high school basketball games,
yeah,
right?
I start our season starting up here this week. I've got a tournament out in West Chicago. I'll be announcing Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. And then I'll also be doing with Hinsdale Central's Christmas tournament, which comes up in another month. We'll have should be a good field for that, the Hinsdale Central Classic year 3. So should be an exciting year. Again, I enjoy high school sports a lot, and watching basketball and announcing those games, it's a privilege, and I'm lucky to be able to do it, and I thank the schools that allowed me to do it over the years. So.
Yeah, well, it's nice for you to be able to give a shout-out for them as well.